I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live.
It's only just a matter of
welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. So here's a question to get the show started. Do you run away from tough conversations, or do you avoid them altogether? Do your emotions sometimes get the best of you and even maybe get ahead of you? We're going to talk today about, even I'm hoping by the end of the hour, you feel equipped to have some of those tough conversations maybe that you'd rather avoid. My guest today says this: there's a moment in your conversation that can change everything, a moment when you can either move forward toward the other person or away from them. You can choose to break a negative cycle or continue it, understand and be understood, or remain confused and frustrated. Nicole Yunus joins me today to talk about her new book, The Miracle Moment: How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. It is a hands-on therapy book. I'm telling you, we've got 5 copies to give away today. If you listen often enough, you know the drill. But if you're new to Faith Radio, first of all, welcome. But let me tell you how it's done. You just text the word book, not in quotations, not with an exclamation point, just book. You text that word to 877-933-2484. And it needs to be just the word book, because it'll kick back a link to you. And it takes just a quick minute to fill it out. And I want to tell you, the reason we do that is because we love to give resources away every single day on all of our shows as often as we can. And we don't have the manpower to manually enter every single name for the drawing. So if you just take a few seconds to do that, it allows us to continue to be generous. And we love that. So text the word book to 877-933-2484. And here's a question for you, because I love hearing from you. Is there a tough, I'll consider all these texts coming in anonymous, but is there a tough conversation you've been avoiding? What's the scenario? I would love to know. 877-933-2484. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get her on the show. Nicole Yunus is a counselor and a leadership coach. Through her books, speaking, and consulting, Nicole invites leaders and organizations to grow in courageous vulnerability. I love that term. In order to maximize both joy and success at home and at work. She holds degrees from the College of William and Mary and from Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary. She and her husband Dave live in Virginia with their 3 children and 2 pups. Nicole, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you, Susie. I'm so glad to be here.
Looking forward to the conversation. And before we get started, you know, we love to start our show every day talking scripture, and just wondering in your just personal time with the Lord, what's he been talking to you about?
I love this question too. It's one of my favorites to ask others as well. And I was just thinking about, I started reading through the Psalms in July. Felt like I just sense a weariness, even though I think we're coming out of where we've been. So many folks around me are just feeling the weight of like the collective trauma of our time right now, and what does it mean for the future? And it just really brought me back to the Psalms, just a place of comfort and wisdom. And I for some reason started in the middle, and I found myself in Psalm 25, and I read Psalm 25:14. It says, "The Lord confides in those who fear him. He makes his covenant known to them." And for some reason, it just caught my attention, this idea that God brings into his confidence those who are walking with him. And in a time where it feels like so many of us are lacking direction and seeking wisdom, this promise that God would sort of decide to confide in us, like to come near us, to give us discernment, to give us wisdom, to know how to walk forward with confidence into this world, was just such a comfort to me. And I've been just ruminating on that phrase for the last several days as I've continued forward in my devotion time.
I love that. That's one I refer to a lot as well, Nicole. And I think about, as we walk in honor and reverence before him and honor him for who he is, and we spend time and we listen, he tells us things we don't know, and he tells us things others might not know. I mean, it's just an unfathomable gift, really. Wow. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's talk about your book. It's a great cover.
Yeah.
Aren't you happy with the cover?
Oh, thank you. So happy with the cover. I
yes,
just love
fantastic.
It. I feel like it grabs your attention and says, hey, this is possible. This is
indeed.
Possible.
And let me give the title to the listeners who just tuned in, The Miracle Moment, How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. And you say most of us have never really learned how to handle conflict. So our relationships, listen to this, friends, tend to be superficial, transactional, and often unfulfilling. But it doesn't have to be this way. Why do we default there? I mean, I think I know the basic, obvious answer. We don't want to get hurt, but maybe dig us a little deeper.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it goes a little bit deeper. I think one of the things that's so interesting to me is that we study all of these things, right? And some of us go to college and we get degrees and we have like these focuses. We spend time with our kids and we're willing to get our kids coaches for soccer and for hobbies and, you know, all of these different things. But a lot of times, one of the places that we've never been coached is really in life. We don't have that same experience with just like the stuff of life. And I write in the book about a story of being in a calculus class and listening to this calculus professor when I was a freshman in college, who was so smart about math that he couldn't teach it. I mean, it just was like the level at which you needed to, like, I needed to be taught calculus. He wasn't teaching at that level. And it was such a frustrating experience because it came naturally to him. And I think for many of us, we kind of think, well, I'm an adult now, I should know how to have this conversation with my boss about my compensation, or I should know how to have this emotional conversation with my spouse. But in a lot of ways, like, we haven't necessarily been taught, and maybe there's some people out there who are naturally good at it. I'm not one of those people. And so I approach this book from a place of saying, hey, like, I've experienced this as a really hard thing to do, to really get what's inside of you, outside of you, in a way that other people can receive and understand. To make space for other people to do the same has not come naturally. And it's actually really hopeful to me that it hasn't come naturally, because it feels to me like this is just some tools that we need in our toolbox. And if we had more understanding and tools to use, maybe we would find that we actually are able to step into these miracle moments where our normal response and reaction, we actually are able to do something different.
You know, I wonder if we think about ourselves that we don't like to do hard things and we're not good at hard things, but that's actually, I don't think it's true, because we all do hard things. Sometimes I think it takes way more energy and is much harder to avoid hard things than it is to go after them, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where
absolutely.
I think we do hard things. It's just that we have to decide which hard thing is going to move us forward towards health and which one puts us into self-preservation. Say more about that, if you would, because, I mean, is it mostly about self-preservation? Why we avoid this in fear?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really is. And I talk in the book about fear. And some of it is, again, I think that part of us that it could be shame too. And by shame, what I mean by that is like, hey, I've tried to be vulnerable before and it hasn't worked. So now I like don't know if it's accept, like if I'm okay, like is who I am and what's in here okay. And I love what you said, Susie, about like, are we going to do self-preservation or are we going to do health? But I actually even like to press people even further, because if we don't know where we're going, it is really hard to do something different. So for many of us, we have to decide that the pain of staying the same is like harder than the pain of changing. And another way to say that on a more positive side is I like to say to people, who do you really want to be when you grow up? Not your vocation, not your circumstances. I don't want to hear about any of those things. I want to ask you, like, in your character, what kind of person do you want to become? Do you want to be more patient, more loving, more forgiving, more courageous? Whatever those words are that even for our listeners right now, they hear a word and they're like, yeah, I want to be that. Because when we know where we're trying to go, it's a lot easier to take some small steps of transformation toward that person. So I've had a lifelong goal of wanting to be more patient. I just am not patient at all. I move fast. I think fast. I push people too fast. And as I've had that goal, what happens is if I'm trying to be patient and I know that I desire that and I'm willing to work for it, well, now when I get cut off in traffic, it isn't about the person in front of me, whoever, whatever they're doing. It's about an opportunity, a spiritual growth opportunity for me to become more patient. And I have control over that. That's like something I can actually work on. As long as I'm acting and reacting like everything in the world is, I just have to react to what's out there. I'm never really able to take some of those steps to say, huh, like this hard thing, this growing edge, this way that I'm trying to grow, this is about me becoming more of who I know I want to become. That becomes a very, very powerful mindset to enter into when it comes to actually doing things differently in your relationships.
I love what you just said. I move fast as well. I move fast and fast. And I do feel, you know, that's where impatience comes up for me with mm-hmm. driving, you know, is seeing people yeah. on their phone, they're driving into the bumper, you know what I mean? And, but really to turn that around, for one, to deal with my own heart, but then to pray mm-hmm. for them rather than get
yes.
mad because of who they're putting in danger. I mean, that's fantastic when you look at who do I want to be and then what opportunities are provided for me today to move in that direction. That's fantastic. Okay, when yeah. we come back, I want you to tell the story that you opened with about a nonprofit organization that you worked with. You interviewed mm-hmm. the staff members. There was some tension there, and mm-hmm. you know, you were hearing underhanded gossip, misunderstandings, mm-hmm. all this stuff that was brewing under the surface, but not everybody knew what was going on with the other hearts. And I want to know, how did you navigate that? And I'd love to know. Talking to Nicole Yunus, her book is The Miracle Moment, How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. We've got a handful of copies to give away. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. And if you feel like sharing, what hard, difficult conversation have you been putting off? Maybe you need a little help moving forward. I'll consider all of those texts anonymous today. And more with Nicole Yunus in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, talking to Nicole Yunus. She's an author, a counselor, a leadership coach, consultant. Her book is titled The Miracle Moment, How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. Got a handful of copies to give away. It's really a handbook on just getting to know yourself, knowing how important it is to communicate and not let your emotions lead, and how to really have these miracle moments where it could normally blow up and destroy the relationship. Maybe God will step in and redeem it as you just follow his lead. And even, you know, there's tools that are required for healthy relationships. There are. So we've got a handful of copies. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. Nicole, you opened with a story about a nonprofit that you were working with and you're interviewing. There was some trouble on the horizon. You're interviewing these different people. And there was, you know, like you said, some gossip and some different things going on, but it hadn't really surfaced yet. How did you help them navigate that?
Yeah, you know, this is really the reason I even wrote the book, was because that story represents lots of stories, whether it's marriages or teams or just people's personal frustrations where, you know, we're really wired for meaning, Suzy. We make interpretations. We write stories about what we're experiencing. We're all doing that all the time. We're constantly taking in information and fitting it together into an interpretation. And one of the things I love about my work is that I have sort of a sideline seat to two different people's experiences and interpretations. They're both in the same moments. They're experiencing the same facts, but the way they're putting those facts together is so different. And what happened particularly in this moment was I recognized these are both great people. Like, both parties in this particular situation telling me a very different story. They're awesome people. They really want to do good. They want to have good relationships, much like you and me and most everyone listening. We all kind of want the same thing, but somewhere along the road, we get kind of sidetracked. And as I was listening to these two particular people, kind of a manager and team member situation, it was like, oh my gosh, like what's happening here? The interpretations that are coming from the experiences that people have had, really from moments that might seem not that meaningful to one party, but the other party is like, man, that time that you shut me down, that time where you turned away, that time where you misunderstood what I said and we never cleared it up, now I'm telling myself a story
that this is how I'm valued. This is where I belong. This is what people don't want from me. And those trains of thought, whoo, those can be like super highways that take us to incredibly different places, especially when we're triggered emotionally, which, by the way, we all get triggered emotionally. Even if your emotional trigger is to get silent or to withdraw or to go to poker face, that's still emotional. It just doesn't appear like someone who blows up or gets super defensive verbally or, you know, anything else that you and I could both kind of see on the outside. We have these experiences and we tell ourselves that story, and that story connects in our life in a way that sometimes we get really far apart from each other and we don't even know it's happened.
Yeah. And really, to add the spiritual component, we have a sinister enemy who puts dots out there, hoping we'll connect the dots and draw a wrong conclusion. And you think about people who've got past trauma, unresolved hurts, then they've got a present situation, and then that enemy is just poking in there a little bit here and there. And you're telling yourself a narrative that actually feels true, even though it isn't true. And I think the longer you keep it under wraps, the more cancerous it becomes. So how did you help these guys sort this out?
Yeah. I mean, it was really about, is this a place where we want to build trust? And do we want to all decide that, yes, we want to build trust? Well, how does trust, one of my friends says, trust is built at the speed of relationships. Like, you can't change, you can't move forward without trust. And so what does it look like to start to address any issues of trust that might be out there? And trust is a funny thing, because you can't just like really say to someone, well, I just don't really trust you. I mean, you could, but that's usually not going to go well. So what we want to be able to do is be able to say, hey, we need to understand if there's a breach between us, and where is it a one-way breach? Most one-way breaches are actually two-way breaches. So here's another story about that. I was working with a young couple who was engaged, and they were working through some issues. And one of the people was like, I just hate that you're always on your cell phone. You're just always on your cell phone, and you're never like present with me. And it sounds like a one-way breach when it starts, meaning one person's hurt by the other person's actions, right? So you sort of think, oh yeah, that must be what it is. But if you let there be time and space to say, tell me your side of the story, what does this feel like to you? Well, as the story continued, it was like, well, whenever I'm on my phone, you accuse me of like improper relationships. I've never given you any reason to think that. And every time you do that, I just want to like get even further away from you. Oh, okay. So now both parties have said words and actions that have contributed to a lack of trust. It's a two-way breach. So a lot of times when we start working through our relationships, we've got to be able to say, okay, what were the behaviors? Really, if I was just going to talk about like the actual behaviors, what is the actual behavior that's going on? What's the actual thing that happened? And then this is a huge tool for everyone's toolbox, is just being able to separate your behaviors and the feelings, so that I don't just make the feelings be what actually happened. So for instance, hey, when we had that team meeting, I felt like you said, I said this thing and you said this thing. I felt like you disregarded what I said. I don't know if that's what you meant, right? Because now I'm talking about a behavior. I'm not just assuming that they meant to disregard me. I'm not assuming that they meant to disrespect me. So when we can slow down and say, okay, wait a second, let me be my own scientist. Let me rewind the game tape. Why did I just get irritated? Why did I feel disregarded? What was the actual behavior? What happened between me and this other person? How do I start there and separate out like what I'm feeling from that, so that when I go into the conversation, I'm not going in with my guns loaded? Like, your gun is loaded. If you've already decided what the other person was doing or feeling, you've already interpreted what they meant, and you go into a conflict with that loaded gun, it is very difficult to come back from that place.
We have a life coach friend who says, to make a case, he's often consulting employees, like in big organizations, to go to your boss to say, this, 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 and this made me feel this way. Is this how you want me to feel? And I love that question. I just think that's so helpful. But you're right. When we've decided and drawn conclusions, I'll tell you what you mean. Boy, then you've got a blown up bridge. This dear listener says, we see a lot of red flags with our daughter's choice in a boyfriend, likely soon to be a fiance. She's smart, sweet, Christian, near 30. I'm afraid her desire to get married and start a family is blinding her. He's a nice, also Christian guy, but they're so very different in many ways. Any thoughts or advice there?
Well, I'm glad we found out how old they were, right? Because that's a really important part of navigating what do I do when I'm a parent, but my child is an adult. So we really do have to start with your child is an adult. Like for her, she has her own agency to make her own choices. And the reality is sometimes our children will make choices that we can see are not wise. And there's that whole journey to deal with, especially if you're, you know, if you're married, if the older couple is married, how do you guys find unity and consensus together around what your boundaries want to be around this relationship? And then I use the same approach with the behaviors. And sometimes you have to do a lot of internal work because something that happens with parents and children is it can spark a lot. Parents and children can spark a lot of the parents' unhealed story. Mm-hmm. So when I was I was a private practice for several years. And one of the things that I noticed is I often saw women whose girls were teenagers would become a time where the mom would all of a sudden recognize all of this unhealed stuff that she had because she would be remembering being 16 and there would be conflict with the 16-year-old and it would bring up like, oh, like I've got all this stuff that I've never dealt with. And now I'm taking out my frustration on my daughter instead of dealing with my own stuff. So one of the things I say to parents, particularly of adult children, is the first work that you have to do is ask yourself, is this a preference thing? Like, did we just picture life differently? Like, did we picture their spouse differently? Or are there actual behaviors that we can point to so that we could say to our daughter with all truth and love, we love you, we will always support you, but here are some behaviors that we've noticed. And we wonder if you've noticed those as well. How do you feel about that? So I do say that with all honesty, like we do have to let go sometimes of the expectations we have. I've been with adult parents who, when they really parse it out, it's more like, well, I thought they would be with someone who like, you know, was more, had their life more together.
Or
they
would have
had money to save. Yeah. Or like play the guitar. That's a great one, Susie. I really wanted my husband to be able to dance. Like it was like, yeah. I really wanted to marry a man who could dance. It was in my top five. I mean,
right,
truly.
Right.
And
yeah.
I got the other four and I'm glad that I didn't allow that preference truly to become a need. Right. But I'm guessing these guys are seeing real behaviors that have written in. And if they can try to find those behaviors, say, here's the things that we're noticing. Here's the way that we're noticing you are with this person. And we just want to open up a dialogue to help us understand where you're coming from and what you're experiencing. So we're trying to get into that humble position where we really believe that we don't know everything. Because once we've made our interpretation and we've created our judgment, it is very difficult to have an open conversation. So I'll often say to parents, if you think there's even just like a 2% chance that you don't have it right, like if you're 98% clear on this guy, but there's like a 2% chance that you're not sure, lean into the 2%. In the way that you engage, like lean into the idea that there might be information that you're missing, that there might be more to this person than what you've experienced, because that will place you in a posture of humility. And it is much easier to have a deep conversation, a vulnerable conversation, when it's obvious that there's not someone who's already made a judgment and is coming at the conversation from that place of judgment.
Boy, that's so helpful, Nicole. As we're going to break here, dear listener, I've shared this before on this show, but I was in a situation with one of my sons, and I finally had to sit down with him and say, honey, you know how we feel, but we love you. We're for you. You're an adult. So we're going to pull back. We've explained our concerns, but you're not going to hear another thing from us because it's your decision. You'll live with it. We love you. We are for you. And within 2 months, he broke up with her because then his elbows unlocked because he wasn't defending himself anymore. Mm-hmm. And suddenly he was feeling the weight of his own decision. And he said it was the best thing he could have done. So, boy. Sometimes that's what you got to do. All right, more with Nicole Eunice in just a moment. Love love that song. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, talking to my friend Nicole Yunus, who's written a great book, The Miracle Moment, How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. It's just a therapy textbook to help. It's a trade book, but it reads like that, where you can get so much equipping to have some of these difficult conversations that you probably avoid, and really how to move towards relationships and get some wins and to grow deeper in intimacy, and even ones that maybe you think, if you let your emotions get the best of you, would be destroyed because of an outburst, that there's a way to do this. We've got 5 copies to give away. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. And if there are difficult conversations you've been avoiding, been afraid to have, let me know about those. I'm going to consider every one of those texts anonymous today. And again, if you want in on the drawing, just ask to be a separate text with the word book. This dear listener says, let's see, I'm verbal and I don't avoid issues. And I'd love to be closer to a child, but they deny their issues and they don't like emotions. I fear rejection, which is how my childhood was. So what do you say?
Well, first of all, I would say good for you to be self-aware enough to realize that you're having a fear come up. So that's a huge one is, you know, we'll have a way of doing things and we'll get rebuffed in some way. And then the fear comes, right? And we can follow that fear train. And a lot of times I like to ask people, let's just play the worst case scenario. Let's just play out the worst case scenario. It's like, well, my child's going to reject me and, you know, they're going to be far from me. I'm going to say something that's going to hurt them. And I'm like, okay, well, let's play out the other worst case scenario where you sort of withdraw. You're not your full self. Okay, well, what's the worst case scenario there? Well, maybe they would doubt my love for them, or they wouldn't know if I wanted to be close to them. You know, so you kind of walk down the tracks outside of the moment that you're in and say, which of these tracks do I want to be on? Because both of them are uncomfortable. Like neither one of them is that easy. And we can sometimes think that, oh, I'll just kind of abdicate a little bit, or I'll avoid or whatever. And in doing so, we actually can be choosing a worse path. And I would say, like, one of the things you can do if you're very verbal and they're not, sometimes it helps so much to have a trusted friend or your spouse and be like, hey, do you think that I'm pushing too much? And what kind of verbal, of course, is what I would ask. Like, are you very verbal about the way you want them to live and about the way you want them, they need to change things and do things? Or are you very verbal with your affirmation, with your encouragement, with your, you know, approval? So we want to look for the ways that we want to balance out our temperament. The more we're self-aware about how we are in relationships overall, the more we can take and apply that stuff to relationships that are more difficult, to seasons when our children feel, you know, far from us.
I love what you said, even just the idea of balancing your temperament, because it's so easy to go, what? This is how I am. You know, and I know this listener is probably not saying that, but I'm saying if you're maybe very verbal with opinions and you think everybody needs to accommodate me, you know, and I remember I had a friend years ago, I just loved her, but I noticed over time that it was one-sided. I had to do all the driving. I had to go always to her place on her terms. And I had more kids and I was battling a disease, and she had health and wealth, and it felt so lopsided. And then I felt condescended to and corrected at times. And so I remember just one day sitting down going, you know, that's really hard for me. And she goes, she straightened up, stiffened up and said, you shouldn't feel that way. And it was the end of the conversation. And I thought, okay, you just drew a line in the sand, because we never had more intimacy after that. It just sort of fizzled after a while. And that's tricky when a person won't look at themselves. And I never even heard that phrase before, to balance your temperament, but that requires some humility, right?
Yeah. Well, and you just spoke, Susie, to a very important thing that, like, if we could say one thing, especially on this show with believers who are listening and are trying to seek, how do I love like Jesus? This is a place where particularly Christians, although this book is written for a general audience, I'm going to speak specifically to Christians. We're like, what do I do when a relationship falls apart? We just, a lot of times we feel like we failed as believers. And I really think that that is a cultural artifact that we need to address. Because if you look at Jesus in the Gospels, the minute Jesus begins his ministry, conflict begins. There is conflict around Jesus, his entire ministry. So if we think somehow we're going to live this life in a way where it's just going to be conflict-free, I would say, well, if he said, Jesus said, follow me, and we're following him into a good amount of people misunderstanding, people walking away, all of that, that's not in any way a license not to love. But what I would say is that we do need to be wise and discerning about the people that are in our very closest circle. So your example of your friend is perfect. I really think there's three things that need to be in a person in order for them to be in that closest trustworthy circle. Now, it's not to say that you can't love people if they don't have these things, but it's a chance for you to set your expectations properly on what kind of relationship you can have with a person. So those three things are honesty, empathy, and repentance. And what I mean by repentance is the ability to see someone else's perspective and have your mind changed when you learn something different. So with your friend, there was no empathy, right? So in the moment where you said, hey, I just want to tell you how I'm feeling from my position, the answer was you shouldn't feel that way. So your friend wasn't willing to take off her own sort of perspective and say, I'm going to put on your perspective and see how it might feel from your side so that we can work towards compromise. And if a person's not willing, just over time, like all of us fail to do these things at one time or another. But if there's a persistent pattern where a person's not able to be honest with themselves or you, not able to view life from a different perspective, have empathy for a different posture, and isn't willing to have their mind changed, like, oh, now that I know that, I'm willing to change my mind, I'm willing to do actions differently in order to love you, then the level of depth of that relationship will suffer. Doesn't mean we can't be in relationship, but we want to be wise about how we're in relationship with people like that.
Boy, that's so good, because when those are present, Nicole, you feel safe. I have a great friend. She's been a friend for a long time, and she said, I never get too excited about a new friendship until we have our first conflict, because then I know what it's made of. And I think when you've got inner circle people who you know, if you're going to head to the ditch, they're throwing themselves in front of you. They may say a hard thing, but they love you. There's a safety in that, because it's tried and it's been tested, you know?
Yeah. And you know what? You may have one or two friends like that in your whole life. Yeah. And I was speaking with a friend about that. And he said, I remember he said so specifically, I feel like if you have one or two friends like that, you are richly blessed. Like, what if we had that kind of perspective? It's not to say we don't love all these other people, but the kind of go to it and really go for it kind of depth comes with just a few. And that's okay, because a few together, you know, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. Like, we really do have strength and safety when we can do that with those that are closest to us. And then we can model that kind of freedom and love of relationship to others as well in a way that draws them in, because a lot of people have never experienced that kind of relationship. I love what your friend said about it's not till you have a conflict that you know, like, what kind of relationship is this really?
In the book, you tell a story about a time you were out with some friends celebrating one of your friends' birthdays. If you don't mind, just because I have a follow-up question to this, but the conversation you said sort of devolved into conflict around politics. It seems like every conversation around politics devolves into conflict, but these days anyway. But tell us that story if you don't mind.
So we were out for a birthday dinner, and, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes when this stuff happens, what you realize is there's more going on underneath the surface than you thought. And that's my thing. It's not that politics are not important. It's not that perspectives aren't important. It's that when politics or anything becomes personal, it usually means there's more going on there. There was already something going on, and maybe it's just been unearthed by this. And so when families have, you know, conflict around politics, it's like, well, do both parties feel respected? Are you able to say, like, I will listen to you and honor you? Is empathy, honesty, and repentance exist? If those things don't exist in your family, you're probably not going to have easy conversations when you see things differently. So in this particular situation, it didn't actually resolve that well. It was one of those things where the conversation turned. There was a couple of jabs, personal jabs made about different places in life that each friendship was in. And those personal jabs is what I actually wanted to follow up on with those friendships later. Because although, of course, how we view politics is important, if either of us feels insecure or unseen or disrespected by another person's something that's been said earlier, something that's being lived out, then we want to be able to address that, because that's actually between the two of us. Politics is a transactional conversation that we're having about views. But if there's something deeper going on, well, when you said that, I felt disrespected because you've been disrespecting the choices that I've been making for the past years. Well, now that's a different conversation. Does that make sense? Like,
absolutely.
I want to have that conversation. I want to ask the question, how is it that you felt disrespected by me and how can I do that differently? Because that is not my intent. So a lot of times we don't get to that place where we say, okay, now let's address what's actually between us so that we might be able to have a conversation about diverging views, but we don't do it from a place of disrespect or I don't feel seen. I don't feel validated. Those are the kinds of things that end up coming up because that's what that's how we get triggered, right? It's because of those emotions. And there's a lot more to say about that you can find in the book that we won't have time for today.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this. There's something that I call shadow boxing. When you read into a situation, sometimes incorrectly, and then you dialogue in your head and you start to defend yourself. And even you can sometimes make self-sabotaging decisions over a fight that's actually not even really happening. And I think you talk a little bit about that in internal dialogue, but how and why do we get into those places? We all do that, I think, to some degree, where you feel triggered and then you start to go, oh yeah. And then you kind of enter a dialogue that you're the only one a part of. So what do you say?
Right. I mean, it's really a protective mechanism if you think about it. Like we're trying to work something out. Like we don't like to feel out of control. We don't want to be hurt. If we've already been hurt, we don't want to be hurt again. And we can quickly kind of get backed into the corner. You know, I think of it as like, you know, a caged animal is going to bite or run. Like that's what you do when you feel threatened. And a lot of us, like, we feel threatened and we don't even know that we feel threatened. We don't know why we feel threatened. We don't know what that thing is that's surfacing. This is the place of real spiritual growth and maturity and why I spend so much time in the book talking about self-awareness, because we want to understand, because what happens when we don't know about those hurts is that we can hurt other people with the way that we've been hurt. So if I have an issue where, you know, I grew up moving all around, I grew up as an army brat, I always sort of was in a new place and trying to find my way. So I have a very sensitive, you know, I call it like a scar, you know, you've got like a scar where I'm very sensitive to feeling like I don't belong. I'm very sensitive to feeling like I'm not kind of in the know or like approved of or affirmed in a group. So if I take that wound, right, that scar, and someone in my life who doesn't know that about me, or we haven't had that conversation, just does something, they don't mean to exclude me, but I was excluded from a situation. If I'm going to live out of my previous story, I'm going to miss the opportunity, first of all, to heal, second of all, to deal with what's actually in front of me. And if I'm going to bring all of that emotion into this experience that I'm having, it's not fair to the other party. It's actually not fair to me either, because I'm still living out of my 8-year-old problems. I'm not living like a 38-year-old or a 48-year-old or whoever I want to be. And so the self-awareness work is the ability to say, oh, like I just felt excluded. And actually, that's a scar that I have, because that's a place of belonging is something that I've really needed to work on. And I can bring that to the Lord. I can ask for healing. Help me to feel secure with you, Jesus, so that when I'm in this situation, I can deal with what's just actually in front of me. I don't need to like take everything, all the baggage from my past 30 years and put it into this one experience in this friendship. And so self-awareness helps us to separate really that kind of ball of yarn that we can get into where one thing leads to another. And the next thing you know, we're acting out of that very guarded place. We're playing out all of those scenarios in our head. We're doing all these self-protective mechanisms that maybe we needed when we were 8. But if you're 38 or 48, maybe it's time to let that go and like learn a new tool. I love to give people the comfort to be okay with who you are, but also be okay with releasing what you don't need anymore.
Hmm. So good, Nicole. I mean, you think about those who are carrying their 4-year-old self with them as an open wound. And suddenly, you know, there's that mechanism in your brain where is it the RAS? Where you basically, whatever you're trained to look for, whatever your repeated messages are in your brain, you find something to confirm that bias, whether it's true or not. And so, you know, if you're carrying around your 4-year-old wounded self, you're always going to find confirmation for that wound. And yet what it does is it gets bigger and bigger and pushes people further and further away. And so
we're all carrying that around, right? Yeah, I mean, we're all carrying around our 4-year-old self. So it's okay. It's more of this ability to say, okay, what worked for me then doesn't have to keep working for me now. Okay. I did what I needed to do then, but now I can be different. And there's like kind of room to hold those two things together. And I think that's a beautiful thing about humanity.
And isn't that just even the powerful thing where you name it? I heard that that takes out so much of the punch and the anxiety for you to go, okay, wait, in this moment, I suddenly felt excluded. And I know what that's about from my childhood, but now I can resolve it in an adult mind, in an adult mindset mm-hmm. as a believer. I mean, I think just naming it is half mm-hmm. the battle, right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely, so Susie. So good. Mm.
All right, we're going to pause here. When we come back, I got a text that came in about conflict within marriage, and you even write about this. This one isn't about that, so it'll be a twofold question. But what do you say to couples who are maybe newly married and say, we never fight? Or maybe they've been at it for a while and they say, we never fight. That's always a red flag for me, but I want to hear what you have to say about that. Talking to Nicole Eunice, and her book is The Miracle Moment, How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. She's a counselor, leadership coach, author, and a speaker. We got a handful of copies to give away. You can text the word book to 877-933-2484. Questions, comments, or if there is a difficult conversation you're putting off, text me about it. I'll consider that text anonymous today. Again, 877-933-2484. Back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to Nicole Eunice today. Fantastic conversation around her book, The Miracle Moment, How Tough Conversations Can Actually Transform Your Most Important Relationships. And this dear listener says, one thing I have told many, quote unquote, is that conflict does not have to mean fight. I'm still a newlywed, only married 6 years, but I've never raised my voice to my husband, nor he me. Conflict can be handed down with civility. Conflict can be handled with civility. I have friends who actually think that a knockdown drag out is healthy for a marriage. Conflict is a sign of life, but fighting is a sign of bad conflict management. Mom, what do you say?
Well, I mean, depending on the temperament of the people, I think it's perfectly fine. Like, it's perfectly normal, good to be able to have civil disagreement. And of course, that's the direction we all hope that we would be moving, no matter what, is towards civil disagreement. But I think that for some people, their wiring, their temperament is different, and they end up raising their voice. Of course, we want to move towards edifying one another. We want to move towards not having destructive conversation. We don't want tools in our toolbox to become weapons. But at the same time, for people who never fight, generally I'm like, is everyone in touch with their desires? Is everyone bringing their full selves to the conversation? Mm. Because two parties are going to be, you're going to have needs, you're going to have wants, you're going to have belief systems and values, and there is no way that you are 100% aligned on all those. In fact, I don't believe God desires that, because really iron sharpens iron. The desire for marriage is that we would be able to say, we are better together. Like, we as a unit together, when two become one, we are actually better together than we would be apart. So you balance out, my extroversion's balanced by your introversion. Your sort of in the moment is balanced by my future orientation, all of these things. So we're going to have tension in order to get to that better together space. But how you have that tension, of course, if both parties are able to express themselves honestly and fully, and there doesn't need to be any raising of voices to do so, then yes. If one party is always abdicating their presence, their needs, their preferences, over time, that abdication usually comes out sideways in passive aggressive behavior, in resentment, in anxiety. So it's important to notice, does one party in this party always get their way? Is one party always making all the decisions? Because if so, that party, who's probably a little bit more intense, a little stronger, might need to create a little more space for their partner to actually speak into whatever those decisions are.
Very good. I remember hearing from a couple that they just started off the get-go doing that knockdown drag-out that this listener was talking about, but in a destructive way. And they did it for years, and they realized it's almost like they formed a neural pathway, like 0 to 60. Mm. Like, they just developed a habit of destructive fighting and had to really put the road closed sign to go, that can't be an option for us anymore.
Yeah.
But let's look at the flip side. You actually talk about a problem with being nice, and you say some have a nice disorder. I love it. Yeah. Say more.
Yeah. So, and that's what you sometimes see. I don't think in this reader that what this reader shared or this listener shared was beautifully spoken about, like, conflict can be civil. It doesn't have to be destructive, which is true. But sometimes when there is no conflict at all, There is a nice disorder going on with one party, which is like the absolute inability to say no, the consistent subjugating of their own desires, perspectives, opinions on behalf of others. And a lot of times when we suffer from the nice disorder, we actually are giving in order to get. We have a fear that if we don't give in a certain way, we're not going to get love in response. And if we were truly integrated and said what we really needed or what we weren't really wanted, we would be rejected. And that's a very enslaving dynamic to be in. It's not very fruitful or freeing for either party. Now, I say this with all love because most of the time, if we are giving in order to get, we don't actually know we're doing it. We're operating on a different level. And some of that self-awareness begins to develop. If you're constantly exhausted, if you're constantly saying yes to things, even though you really don't have the bandwidth to do them, if you find yourself like never really giving your opinion and just going along to get along, you may want to slow down and start to ask the question, like, who am I? Like, what has God made me for? What is it that I want in my life? And why do I have such a fear that if I was to step into my confidence or say no, what is that fear that's driving me to not do that? Because it makes me sad, to be honest with you, because people over time who do that, they end up almost a shell of themselves because they're so exhausted and they've allowed themselves to be just pulled in every single direction in a way that doesn't lead to joy. So my general question for anyone in that place is, are you experiencing joy? Are you experiencing joy in your life? What would cause you to have more joy in your life? What if we work from that place and then start to back into better boundaries, which we address in the book in the last section of the book?
So good. You say this, hope is the elixir of change. Hope is the dug down deep sense that it's possible to experience more in this life, more joy, more connection, more excitement, and more enjoyment with people around you. And part of that is that you say we have to get comfortable with the uncomfortable. So we just got a few minutes left, but maybe just cast a vision for what's possible if we stop avoiding and maybe move towards some of these conversations with courage and humility and receptivity. Just cast a vision for what might happen.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just amazing to imagine, could this be possible? And you know what? It's hard work. I have a friend who's in the military. He says there's such thing as perishable and imperishable skills. So like an imperishable skill is you learned how to write with handwriting. Like, you know how to print letters, right? You don't forget. You have it. You don't have to practice. Some of us need to practice our handwriting, but we know how to write letters. Imperishable skills are in this arena of conflict resolution, meaning we always have to practice them. You don't like master it and then never have to practice. It's the kind of thing that's always kind of slipping away. We have to do the work and do the practice. And from my own experience, I'll just share that's what I can share. And I love to use my marriage as an example. I've been married 24 years. In our first years of marriage, we truly had no idea how to understand one another. And it often did go from, you know, my husband was a silence and withdrawal kind of guy, and I was a jump in with more intensity, more words, more strength. Every time he withdrew, I pursued, he distanced, and it was just miserable. We were both miserable. We could not understand each other. We didn't know how to communicate. We ended up in, you know, we did go to counseling. We did really work hard. And when I think back to that, we really are, I mean, obviously we've mellowed, we've matured, but our temperament is the same. I'm still wired the same way. I'm still wired for impatience and intensity and going fast. And he's still wired for stability and steadiness and not using lots of words. That didn't change. But what did change was the ability to say, how can I enter into a conversation respecting you, loving you, making space to seek to understand your perspective? And that is a perishable skill. Like, I still have to work to do that. When I'm triggered, when I'm angry, when he's angry, when we're frustrated, I just want to be frustrated. I like the feeling of being right. I want to choose to be right, right? It's only in the work of saying, okay, wait, what is the result that I'm looking for? Who do I want to become? Nicole, do you want to be more loving? Do you want to be more patient? Do you want to be more forgiving? I just did that this weekend as we were arguing over something. And I have to work myself. I got to do the coaching to say, yes, that's the person I want to become. So instead of ignoring or avoiding this fight or going silent or whatever, now I'm going to step back in and say, I really do want to hear from your perspective. I want to seek to understand, which is one of the big tools in the communication toolbox, is I'm going to say, hey, when you did this, this is what I felt. I want to hear from your perspective. And by doing that, even though our temperaments are the same, there is a new way where we can move toward one another. And there's depth that comes there, right? Because now we're caring about one another on a different level. The transaction is where you have the friction, right? But the transaction is where you can also get to that deeper place of saying, I want to love you. I want to support you. I want to be near you. I want to strengthen you when you feel weak. And that can happen inch by inch, small moment by small moment over time. You will look back as you employ these tools and your relationships will be in a different place than when you started. And that is worth the work.
Come on. Amen. Nicole, I pray you'll come back. This was fantastic.
Thank you.
We got to go.
Would love
friends,
to.
I thank you, hon. And thanks for listening today. I hope you found some encouragement here today. What a great conversation. And we will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player and never miss a show.